InvestTalk is brought to you today by Health IQ. People who work out and eat healthy shouldn't have to pay as much for life insurance. That's the whole idea behind Health IQ. If you're a Health IQ customer, you could save up to 33% on your life insurance premium. How do you find out more about it? To see if you qualify, get your free quote today at healthiq.com/invest or mention the promo code INVEST when you talk to a Health IQ agent. This podcast is produced by KPP Financial. Steve Peasley, President. KPP Financial. Independent thinking, shared success. And now today's podcast.
Good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to our Monday, April 9th, 2018 edition of InvestTalk. And as always, this is our round table discussion about your money, managing your money, helping you save more money, helping you make more money on the money you do have invested, and just making good overall financial decisions. Now, April is Financial Literacy Month, and if you listen to Steve or myself regularly, you will know that we're all about financial literacy. That's what this show is really about. It is to help you understand the concepts that will lead you to financial freedom. But what does financial literacy really mean exactly? Now, of course, it doesn't mean that you know everything about the economy or modern accounting practices or anything like that. It's more about a mindset and a decision to take money management seriously and having good money habits so that whatever goals you have, you are consistently making good money decisions in order to slowly and methodically reach those particular goals. You know, a lot of people want something to solve their money issues fast, right? They want to get to their money goals fast. But almost nobody achieves that. Because really, unless you hit the lottery, you're really not going to get there unless you make consistent decisions that are beneficial to your full financial picture, long term. And if you are financially literate, then you know the concepts and the mindset needed to make the right decisions on a consistent basis. Now, I have a checklist for you to help you define what it is to be financially literate. It's definitely about asking the right questions. And that's where it starts. You don't know what you don't know. And it's okay to ask questions. We say on the show all the time, no question is too simple. No question is really too complex. Unless it's maybe a tax question. I hate those. Because our tax code is quite complex. But the bottom line is, you always have to be learning. You always have to be asking the right questions. And always be inquisitive. So on that note, let's take one of those questions right now from our anytime line at 888-99-CHART. Here's one that came in before today's program.
Hi, my name is Elias from Danville. Getting a quick call. I'm kind of new to investing. I started or created a custodial account for my son, and I was wondering which kind of stock I should look at to purchase with his money to kind of not only start growing his money, but also just to kind of show as he gets older, kind of get him into the idea of stock investing as well. Thank you.
Well, that's a great question. It's a loaded question. One is, how old is your son? You know, is he close to college, right, where he's going to need this money? Is he far away? Is he very young? But I think the latter part of your question is very important. And that is how to get your son into the mindset of investing and interested in it. And what I've seen that a lot of parents do, and it works pretty well, is to invest in companies that are related to things that your son likes, right? Whether that's Disney and he likes a Disney character or a Marvel character, right? They own Marvel now. Or maybe it is an iPad, right? An Apple, and they like they like their iPad or iPhone or whatever any Apple type device. Maybe it's a clothing brand that they like that's public and investing that way. And so that I've seen a lot of times really helps get kids engaged with the idea of investing and asking questions. Because they see a link there. When it's a company that they don't have any interaction with, that they've never really heard of, that they don't get the concept of what they do, they're going to be a lot less interested in it, a lot less inquisitive. And so I think the best is to look at his interests. Could be a sporting, whatever it is, whether it's sports or entertainment or technology, whatever that is, look for things that he uses on a regular basis that he loves and find stocks in relation to that. Hopefully it's not just one as well. Maybe it's 3, 4, 5, 6 different ones. And I think that will pay off even more than just the right investment for his college education. I think the interest that you can get him to have on those investments and the companies that understand the markets and understand dividends and things like that will definitely go a lot farther than anything else you can do. Great question, and glad you called in with it. Now, financial literacy. Are you a financial literate person? Now, here's a checklist you can grade yourself. Are you committed to making informed financial decisions, understanding the difference between wants and needs? That's number one. Being financially literate can mean communicating with the family about money matters, that we are all working towards the same goal, right? To be on the same page with your spouse and your other family members, if maybe extended family, parents and brothers and sisters, maybe are all along the same lines of whatever goals that you might have. You know, it's being aware of the effects of advertising on the financial decisions that you make, right? Think of branding for particular clothing items and paying up for those clothing items, and understand that, you know, is marketing playing that decision, or is it something that really is inherent in their product that is worth that extra spend? Think of Starbucks, for example. Is it really worth that spend? Even though Starbucks is kind of this thing in our culture now, is it really worth the $4 or $5 for a latte? You know, it's about tracking expenses and creating a budget that is not only flexible but realistic with your goals for your lifestyle and your family. It's meeting credit obligations, making sure you're paying off bills on time. It's also cultivating a mindset of learning. Right? Getting your children into the habit of understanding budgeting, understanding savings. This is one thing I remember as a child. I would go to the grocery store with my mother, and she would say, I want something, and she'd say, I can't afford it. And I remember I was young, not understanding the concepts of money. I said, well, just write a check, right? And that was me not really understanding how that worked. So I wasn't educated about it. How to use credit wisely, things like that. And finally, it's about seeking assistance when you need it, being open to that. So being financially literate is about continually learning and making decisions to be a smart steward of your financial resources. And the resources can mean many things. So do you have a question about any of the points on the checklist? Or maybe you just have a question about a concept so that you can become more financially literate? I love those questions, kind of broad questions that not only will help the caller, but everyone else out there. And I'm sure there's a lot of questions that are that are similar between a lot of our listeners out there. So if you have a question, odds are someone else is wondering the same thing. So do yourself, do them a favor, give us a call, 888-99-CHART, and ask your question. Now, this is Invest Talk. I'm financial advisor Justin Klein. What's open for discussion on Invest Talk? How much of your income should you save each month? How much to keep in reserve in emergencies? Emergency fund. How to map out a realistic financial plan? Ask your question. I want to hear from you. Share a comment, 888-99-CHART.
We'll get right back to Invest Talk now. Your questions and comments are welcome, whether it's a stock or a strategy. Maybe you have a real beginner's question. Those are good too. And remember, when we take questions about individual stocks, those are learning opportunities too for everyone. Because inside every discussion about an individual company, there are principles to apply to all.
Let's go to Tina in Pittsburgh. How you doing, Tina?
Hi. I'm a neophyte to investing, and I recently read about applying the Buffett indicator to other countries. I found an ETF for the country of Peru, and I wanted to know your opinion. The ticker is Edward Peter Umbrella.
Okay. I'm assuming when you say the Buffett indicator, you're talking about the GDP to market cap ratio.
Yes.
Okay. And that's the Buffett indicator. There's nothing wrong with using that. And I'm assuming in this article it said that Peru's overall market cap is much lower in relation to its GDP than most other countries out there today, right?
Yes, that's correct.
Okay. And you're looking for exposure there.
Yes.
Go for it.
I'm looking to increase my international stock exposure. I do have a mutual fund exposing to large cap international growth stocks, but I was looking for something in a smaller, more emerging market.
Mm-hmm. And I like that. I like that line of thinking. The values in the market are much, much better in emerging markets than in a lot of our developed markets globally. So I definitely like this idea overall. One big issue I see is that it's pretty concentrated. The top five holdings account for 57% of the fund. And one is Credit Corp, which is 24% of the fund. So you're definitely concentrated, which can be a good thing, can be a bad thing, obviously, depending on how well those top five companies do. But I like your thinking. I like that you're looking at the Buffett ratio. I like that you're looking to diversify your holdings and your portfolio. And you know, there's probably not a lot of ways to get exposure to Peru. The expense ratio on this is 0.62%, which is not low, not high, pretty in line with kind of an emerging market holding, so not too bad. So overall, I like it. I like the line of thinking. I would definitely be shifting away from growth stocks, even if they are foreign. So I would be reducing your exposure to those large cap growth side. And I definitely would say, you know, 3-5% of your portfolio overall in EPU is the symbol of the ETF that you're looking at. There's nothing wrong with that.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
No problem, Tina. Thanks for calling. I like that kind of avant-garde potential investment. And she was looking at the iShares MSCI All Peru ETF. Certainly concentrated, but I like what she's looking at. I think South America is one of the most attractive markets in today's world, with so much of the developed world being so overvalued because of central bank intervention. And I think there's a lot of potential for some of the South American countries. I haven't looked in particular to the Buffett ratio on Peru, but I'm going to take Tina's word for it. And if it is relatively low, it's a good diversifier. This is Invest Talk. Is it necessary to get a real estate license as an investor? How do I form a real estate investment partnership? Should I? What's the downside of selling your home yourself? I welcome any money questions at 888-99-CHART.
Invest Talk continues, a service of KPP Financial. One of KPP's investment programs is called Dynamic Growth. This growth investment program employs KPP's unique market expertise to navigate every market environment. Learn more about it right now on investtalk.com. Just click on the Investment Programs tab. And you can check in now if you have a money question at 888-99-CHART.
Let's go to James in San Jose. How you doing, James?
Very good. Thanks for taking my call.
Thanks for making it. I hear you have a question about Merck.
Yeah, I wanted to have your long-term view, like a three-year view on this company. It pays a good dividend, and it seems like it's at its bottom of this year price-wise, and I think it has a good potential, but I just wanted to ask your opinion.
Well, everyone out there knows who Merck is, pretty much, right? They're one of the largest medical companies, medical device and drug companies in the world. They have prescription drugs in areas of diabetes, obesity, respiratory, cardiovascular, women's health, and many others, vaccines, etc. It's a $151 billion company, yields 3.1%. Very modest debt load, but it's not a big grower, right? It's such a large company doing roughly $10 billion in sales per quarter, maybe about $40 billion per year. So certainly one of the largest out there. Return on equity 29%, very profitable. Yields 3.4, like I said. Earnings supposed to grow 5% this year, 6% next year. It's trading at a PE of 13. Let's look at its operating earnings yields. I was just looking at this. If you're looking at our YouTube live stream, you'll be able to see this. So operating earnings yield is about 5%, 4.94. Not super exciting for a name that's not growing very much. And it's also in an area where there's pressure on drug prices, right? And I'm not sure their patent cliff situation, but I would imagine they have some, and I would look into that a little bit more. Overall, it's just not cheap enough for me. Enterprise value to EBITDA is about 13. Historically, it's been cheap when it's about half that, and we're not there at this time. And there's a lot of, like I said, pressure from Washington on lowering drug prices, and that worries me with a company like Merck. Now, definitely not going to go out of business, has plenty of revenue, positive free cash flow. The dividend is probably relatively safe in the near term. So that's a positive. But if you're looking for price appreciation, is that what you're looking for, James?
Correct, yes. Like, Ron, I was hoping to go around 16 a couple of years.
Yeah, so 60 you said?
Gonna make it up. But 50, yeah. I mean, call option 2020. So.
Yeah, I mean, overall, it's in a downtrend. It tested its moving average, a long-term moving average, earlier this year. Failed. Is trending bearishly. I'm just not a fan of it. It's not a fast grower. Like I said. Risk from action from Washington, and I just don't like it. To be honest, it's not the worst stock in the world, but I just don't like a lot of the trends, not only with the industry but also the stock, and the valuations just aren't cheap enough yet. So I would stay away from Merck for the time being. Good to have on your watch list. In the low 40s, I might rethink it. High 30s might be fantastic, but at these prices, not there yet.
Okay, great. Thanks so much.
Thanks for the call, James.
Bye.
Nope. No problem. Let's go to Lee in San Mateo. How are you doing, Lee?
Hi, Justin. Thank you for taking my call. Really appreciate it.
No problem. Thanks for making it.
Yeah. I sort of inherited these stocks, OPK and UIS. And I'm trying to get rid of penny stocks. Although 52-week high for OPK was 790 and UIS was 1390, I don't have to sell right now, but I am wondering whether I should, when is good price to get rid of those two stocks.
Okay, well, you're looking at UIS. This is Unisys Corp. Computer, and it provides system integration, business process outsourcing, and IT infrastructure design and management services. It's a $525 million market cap company, so definitely a small cap. Earnings supposed to go down 6% this year, up 6% next year. Pays no dividend. Let me look at its performance from a business standpoint. Operating earnings yield's about 1%, not good at all. It doesn't really have any debt. That's the positive, you know. So it's not in risk of going bankrupt or anything like that. But it's just its business performance is pretty poor. Return equity's 4%. Now it has bumped up here a little bit. Its 52-week low is about $7 and 52-week high is about 14. Now it's at 10.40. There's a lot of overhead resistance here around the $12-$13 level. So I would get rid of it relatively soon. I don't like the trend in the chart. I don't like the trend of the business, and it's up into some resistance. So I definitely would dump that relatively quickly. What was the other symbol? I didn't get that.
OPK. It's 307 something like that. 52
Opco Health.
Oh.
Ooh, this one's even worse. I would get rid of this one. This is the biotech space. I would just sell this and move on. This is burning cash. Get rid of both of them. Thanks for the call, Lee. So what's coming up on the next Invest Talk? The silver lining of rising interest rates. That'll be one of the topics of Invest Talk on Tuesday, tomorrow. Now, we're here to answer your question on any money topics. Give me a call right now at 888-99-CHART.
We'll continue with Invest Talk next. But first, a question. Do good drivers usually pay less for car insurance? Of course they do. So shouldn't the same thing apply to life insurance? Well, that's the whole idea behind Health IQ. Health IQ can save customers up to a third on life insurance, up to 33%. Well, here are the facts. Physically active people have a 56% lower risk of heart disease, 20% lower risk of cancer, and a 58% lower risk of diabetes. So here's another reward for staying fit: lower insurance rates. InvestTalk is sponsored by Health IQ, an insurance company that helps health-conscious people like runners, cyclists, vegetarians get lower rates on their life insurance. Go to healthiq.com/invest to see if you qualify. That's healthiq.com/invest. Or mention the promo code INVEST so they'll know you're an Invest Talk listener when you talk with a Health IQ agent. This is Invest Talk. Let's say you're 60 years old and you're close to setting a date for retirement, but you're wondering about a distribution plan, how much to take out of your nest egg each month. Why not talk about it right now? The anytime number is 888-99-CHART.
Now let's talk a little bit about REITs and dividend-paying stocks and why you've seen some pressure on the REIT sector recently. And that has to do with rising interest rates. And there's a few reasons why rising interest rates have a negative effect on the price of REITs. And REITs are real estate investment trusts, and they typically invest in some sort of real estate asset. It could be a nursing homes. It could be industrial complexes, it could be commercial real estate, and it could be retail, it could be offices, it could be, there's ones that own digital real estate, meaning they own data centers and things like that, and related to the technology space. There's also REITs that invest in mortgages that are kind of like banks, but they're focused on real estate related debt. You know, think of Annaly Mortgage and a lot of the high dividend paying REITs out there. And they're going down for a few reasons. One is higher interest rates are negative for for them. Most they're most negative for REIT for the mortgage REITs. But the reason higher interest rates are negative for REITs in general is because they tend to borrow a lot of money, right? They're borrowing money to finance the acquisition of these real estate assets. In the case of mortgage REITs, they're borrowing money short term and they're lending long in the mortgage market, and therefore that squeezes their profits, and the profits are what goes to the bottom line or goes to the dividends that are paid out to shareholders. So that's one of the reasons, or that's one big reason why REITs in general have been weak. And then number two is what affects almost all dividend paying stocks is higher interest rates on safe assets like treasuries suddenly become more competitive to the owning of risky assets that pay a cash flow like a dividend, such as dividend paying stocks. And the higher the dividend is on a particular stock, the more sensitive the price of the underlying stock will be to changes in interest rates. And REITs are one of the highest yielding asset classes out there in the marketplace. So that's one of the reasons why you've seen dividend stocks in general underperform growth stocks as of late. Okay, now if you see interest rates start to reverse, you're probably going to see a reversal of that trend. So just understand that, understand why REITs have been weak. And I actually think REITs are a fairly attractive part of the market today, along with many other dividend stocks. But once again, we talk about this all the time, never focus solely on what that yield is. The higher the yield on a particular stock, the dividend yield, the higher risk it typically is. Okay, especially when you get over 4, 5, 6%, suddenly you start getting into things that dividend could be cut, and the market is pricing in that odds of it getting cut. May not be, but the odds tend to get higher of a dividend cut the higher the current yield is on the particular stock. Let's go to Tony in Hayward. How you doing, Tony?
I'm good. Thank you for taking the call.
No problem.
Thanks
for calling.
I have a question on the market. We are in the current quarter earning season. So
yep.
What's your view on the market? Is it a good time it can rally, or it has more room to go down?
Well, the markets are in have developed a negative trend. You have the moving averages starting to roll over, and you're starting to see rallies not have much legs. Today's a good example of that. The market, I think the Dow was up 300 points at one point. And you actually saw a rollover late in the day, and the Dow closed up positive, but it was very modest. I forgot the exact number. But the major indexes closed near the low of the day. And so we're actually having a negative trend, and this is something that I think could pick up speed for a couple reasons. And a lot of the mainstream media is going to blame this on tariffs. And I'm not saying tariffs aren't going to be an issue if they are implemented, but a lot of these things are proposals, and nothing has been implemented yet, and nothing is even close to being set in stone to be implemented in the future. So tariffs are maybe one factor, and it's something that I'm sure the media is going to talk about a lot. But really, this is all about central banks. ECB has cut their bond buying in half starting at the beginning of the year. The Fed is starting to tighten, and the Bank of Japan is reducing their QE as well. So overall, the trend in the market is now down. Now, is it aggressively down? No. Can we get bounces? Absolutely. Can we get rallies? Sure. But to me, this is a market that is guilty until proven as innocent. You know, with the moving averages starting to roll over, many of them pointing down now, this is a market where I'm more skeptical on any rallies as opposed to optimistic. Does that make sense?
Yes, great. Thank you for the explanation. Thanks.
No problem, Tony. Thanks for calling. That was Tony from Hayward. Now, it can feel like you've got one hand tied behind your back when it comes to your 401k. And the reason that is because making good choices within your employer's 401k plan can be difficult because you're limited on what you can invest in, right? There's 10, 15, 20 maybe mutual funds that you can pick from. And it's a difficult process to understand what the market is doing, which funds are good, which funds are right for you and your personal goals and risk tolerance levels, and how you should allocate that all those factors in today's market, right? How do you decipher all that? And that's one reason why we launched Active 401k. And you may have heard it from Steve and I and talking about it, and all you do is follow the instructions to help you make the best possible choices within your employer's specific plan. You go in, you take a risk questionnaire, and you put in your investment choices. Your plan might be in the system already, actually, and it will give you a quarterly allocation of how you should invest your 401k. It's super simple, and it's great for anybody looking for help with managing and allocating their 401k at their current employer. It's like having a financial advisor help navigate the choices and keep your 401k maximized. If you want to find out more, just go to investtalk.com, click on the Investments tab, and then Active 401k.
Where do you turn for financial news and information? There are a lot of great websites out there to bring you up to date, but you can get lost in them too. If you'd like a quick scan of useful money topics, pay a visit to investtalk.com. Click on the InvestTalk tab and then Income Marketplace.
Hey, Justin or Steve. I've been listening to you guys, and I've heard you say that you guys think commodities are going to do well in this current environment. So I was wondering what you guys thought about ticker symbol USL, United States 12-month oil. It's free to trade with Charles Schwab, so I was thinking about going with that for that reason too. Yeah, just wanting to know what you guys thought. All right, thanks a lot. Thanks for everything you do, by the way. Bye-bye.
All right, he's looking at the United States 12-month oil ETN. This is an exchange-traded fund seeking performance corresponding to the spot price of West Texas Intermediate Light Sweet Crude. Now, he is correct that I do think commodities in this market are a good place to be. However, not all commodities are created equal. I think grains, precious metals, things like that are better than oil in general. Oil's already had a large run, and I think with the shale boom and the advent of shale technology, I think we're actually near the upper limits of how high oil can go in the medium term. Not only that, but this is a fund where you want to trade. If you're looking to trade oil, this is okay. But because the cost of rolling over contracts and things like that, it's not going to correspond long term to the price of oil. For one example, you know, back in 2014, oil was at around $100 a barrel, and this was a high of around $45 a share. Now this is about $22 a share, and oil is about $60 a barrel. So you can see there's not that corresponding move. There's you lose value over time buying and holding. To me, if I'm looking to get exposure to oil, I want to buy oil service companies, oil exploration companies, companies that pay dividends, that earn profits on the assets that they hold, not just speculating on the movement of oil. Because you get not only a corresponding a move with oil prices if oil prices do move up in those particular names, but you also get dividends, and they can make smart allocation decisions if you're investing in the right business, the right ones that are maybe undervalued as well. So I'm not a fan of this, and I'm not actually, I don't love oil when it comes to my exposure to commodities. Actually, we're looking to reallocate into the agriculture space. So that's the place that I would be looking for exposure. And I like what you're thinking with commodities, but this is definitely not the vehicle I would be using to gain access or exposure to the commodities market. 888-99-CHART, 888-992-4278. That's how you get through and ask your question. We have 10 minutes left in the show, maybe 12 minutes left in the show. So if you want to give us a call, you want to do that sooner rather than later. Let's talk a little bit about the jobs market. We have the jobs report that came out on Friday, and it was underwhelming. You had Non-farm payrolls rise just 103,000, which was much weaker than expected. I think it was around 170,000, 180,000 was expected. And there was actually a net revision of negative 50,000 jobs for January and February combined. I think one was up a little and one was down a good amount. So overall, it was a relatively weak jobs report. But that could be just – it's 1 month, right? You never want to – especially with job reports, you know, weather can have an impact, and there's some indication that weather did have some impact on this jobs number. And so you want to look more at longer-term moving averages of job creation. And the expectation for April for this month is a little bit more acceleration to about a little over 200,000. And that's about where the 6 month moving average is, and the 12 month moving average is at about 185,000. And so that's still a pretty decent clip, even though that's decelerated from a high back in roughly 2015 was around 260,000 jobs created a month on average. And so we've definitely decelerated, and overall it's showing you that the economy is decelerating somewhat. In the fourth quarter, we saw GDP at about 2.9%. Most economists are targeting somewhere in the 2 to 2.5% GDP growth for the quarter. Most are kind of right in the middle of that, 2.2, 2.3%. And the indication of that slowdown is at aggregate hours worked. That was up 0.1% after being up 0.6% in February. And usually that's a pretty good proxy for GDP. So it was definitely a weak jobs report, but it wasn't that weak, and it wasn't alarming to a recession or anything like that. But definitely the GDP numbers for the first quarter are likely to be a little bit lower than they were in the fourth. It's kind of too early to say for the second quarter, but the odds are it will be a little bit higher than the first. Let's go to Andre in Sunnyvale. How you doing, Andre?
Hey, good. Thanks for taking my call. Hey, question. Kind of a macro view of things right now. I mean, the Fed really doesn't have many more tricks up their sleeves. We've done near zero interest rates for how long now? QE, multiple rounds of QE. It's not working, obviously. And if inflation starts to brew, which is possible, and they can't raise interest, I mean, they're kind of in a conundrum. Because you want to tame inflation, but if you start raising interest rates, I mean, I believe this whole housing market is propped up on near zero interest rates. What's the end game? Because you can't, I mean, the debt stack for the government can't be serviced at higher than, I mean, like 3 or 4%. I mean, the government would basically go bankrupt. Are they looking at like retiring the debt at some point, having a debt jubilee? I know that's kind of a multi-pronged question, but it's something that I think about every so often. What is the end game for us?
Well, I think one indication of what the end game is if you look at Japan. And Japan has bought up a vast majority of their own debt, right? They printed yen. And they've bought up their own debt. And I think at one point we get to that. Now, is that in the next cycle? Is it, you know, 10 years from now? Is it 30 years from now? You know, it's really hard to say because there can be major changes to the economy based on what Washington does, right? Certainly, reform for the tax code can help, which Trump talked about that, and he did that to some degree. Is it going to change the economy dramatically? I don't really think so. But there can be more reforms that make the economy more efficient, and I think that's really what has one of the biggest reasons why the Fed has inflicted so much damage to our economy with zero interest rates for so long is because it's allowed Washington to be dysfunctional, to be lax, and not make positive changes to reform our economy. So what is the end game? I do think the end game eventually is is, I wouldn't say a debt jubilee, but it's we're going to be monetizing our debt, just like Japan is, and that's really the end game of lower and lower interest rates, zero interest rate policy, and Japan is a good blueprint of how this will play out kind of long term. Thanks for the call, Andre.
Let's get back to your calls on Invest Talk for this Monday, April 9th. Investors may be jittery about the Fed's plans to bump up rates this year, but you may be able to benefit the silver lining of rising interest rates. That's next time. For your question right now, 888-99-CHART is how to get through to Invest Talk.
Hey, Steve. My name is Zach from New Jersey. I'm 21 and I'm just getting into the investment game. I was given some money as a kid, and I put it in big blue chip stocks, mainly technology. And now that I'm learning a little bit more, I found that my diversification is way too risky for me right now. It's all in these technology stocks that are really overvalued. Just looking for some suggestions on how to diversify while still maintaining moderate risk. I know bonds are kind of out of the question for someone my age, so maybe a stock fund with continuous dividends or something along that nature. Let me know your thoughts. Thanks. Bye.
Yeah, you could certainly diversify into a dividend-focused ETF or mutual fund. That's one way to go. What I would say is I would look at certain sectors that are undervalued right now. Packaged food companies are fairly undervalued in general, some more than others. Commodity stocks, I think that's a good diversifier and away from the technology space. And like I said earlier, kind of agriculture, precious metals, things like that. That's a good place to be, I think, at this time. What else? There's some healthcare companies that are undervalued, but that takes a little more digging and expertise. But in general, I like what you're thinking. I like that you're moving away from tech stocks in a time when many tech stocks are very, 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 very overvalued. Great thinking, and definitely would, if you're looking for a more moderate risk, look for some dividend payers in a few of those sectors I mentioned. 888-99-CHART, 888-992-4278. Let's talk about some IRA mistakes to avoid to close the show. Now, assets across all IRA accounts topped $8.4 trillion in 2017. A lot of those are rollovers from 401ks. And investing and opening an IRA is pretty simple, whether that's rolling it to from your old 401k to a regular IRA, setting up an IRA account. It's all pretty simple. You pick a brokerage firm, mutual fund company, open that account. It's pretty simple. But there are some mistakes that many people make when it comes to them. First is waiting till the last minute to make those contributions. You may not have all of the money for your contribution in the January of the year you want to make that contribution, but don't wait until April of the following year to make that contribution, right? You shouldn't be waiting until now to make your 2017 contribution. If you don't have all the money, do an auto investment plan. Put $100 a month, $200 a month, whatever you're going to put in that IRA for the year, do that on a monthly basis. That will allow your money to compound and grow more effectively over time. Number two is assuming Roth contributions are always the best. Many people think that. You should always do a Roth IRA. Well, if you're in a high tax bracket now and you can write off that tax or that contribution to a regular IRA, there's nothing to say that you shouldn't do that because it's all about that, is how what's your tax rate now compared to in retirement. Now, if you aren't sure, don't think it's an either-or decision. You can do both. Split it up. You can put $5,500 is the max, $6,500 if you're over 50. Split that in half. Put half in a Roth, half in a traditional if you're not sure whether you should put in one or the other. That's one way to do it. Another, if you make too much to deduct your IRA contribution, one thing you should look into is doing a backdoor Roth IRA conversion. You know, you put the money into your IRA tax, and you can't write it off anyway, so you might as well convert that to a Roth, because you already paid taxes on it. Talk to your tax provider or professional to make sure you're within the rules, but that's always a good line of thinking. Also, not contributing later in life. It's true you can't put money into a regular IRA after 70 and a half, but if you have earned income, meaning you worked after that age, you can put money up to the amount you earn, not from Social Security in your portfolio, into a Roth IRA. So don't, you can do that. There's many more as well. Maybe I'll get to this later in the week. Keep it around. Time to close the hour. You can see more about today's talking points. Are your REITs feeling the pressure? Right there on investtalk.com. There's a link to replay today's show as well. I'm financial advisor Justin Klein. Steve Peasley and I thank you for making us a part of your day. Let's meet again here tomorrow.
Because of the nature of the interactive dialogue inherent in the format of this program, it's important for the listener to understand that not all comments made will apply to them specifically. Nothing said shall be taken to be investment advice, or shall statements on this program be considered an offer to buy or sell securities. Such advice is rendered solely on an individual basis, and at times will require that the investor review a prospectus before investing. InvestTalk is a copyrighted program of Klein Pavlis Peasley Financial, a registered investment advisor, which retains all rights. For more information regarding KPP's investment advisors, call 1-800-557-5461. Steve Peasley is President and Justin Klein, Chief Executive Officer of Klein Pavlis Peasley Financial. And they thank you for listening and welcome your comments or questions on our 24-hour listener line at 888-99-CHART.